morning, good evening, good coding campers. It's Monday, and that means it's time for NFDN Radio, the show that helps developers find what they're looking for. Good code, good conversation, but most of all, good time. So here to bring us into the week is our host, Mike Benkovich.
Hey, and thank you, Eric, and I want to welcome everyone back to another day, another exciting edition of MSDN Radio, the radio show that helps developers find out what you need to know. A lot of stuff going on in the technology world. We just got done with the Tech Ed a couple weeks ago here, and while I was down in New Orleans, I had the good fortune of hanging out with our guest today, and that is Rocky Lacka. Rocky, you want to say hi?
Hi. Great to be here.
So we'll be talking here in just a few minutes, but I kind of wanted to give people a chance to hear what's going on, what's new inside of Microsoft and the technology world. Probably the biggest news that just came out just this morning, in fact, is the announcement of PDC10 is going to be coming up here October 28 and 29. If you want to register and go out and attend, it's actually going to be held in Redmond. So it's 2 days in Redmond. It's all for developers. We're going to talk a lot about what's going on, what's the new release, what kind of content and technology do people want to go out and check it out. So go out to the MicrosoftPDC.com, and you can find out information about what's going on with that. A couple other things that you may have noticed if you've been out to the MSDN site, if you go out to MSDN.microsoft.com, you'll find it's got a whole new look. We've done a redesign and a redelivery of what that content looks like to make it easier for developers to find information about specific topics, whether you're looking for desktop, web, cloud, or phone. Each one of those has a nice place where you can go out and get to information. Plus, if you want to try out Visual Studio, there's a link to download the trial right on the main page, so it's real easy to get started on that. Sometimes we like to talk about what's new in the if you've got an MSDN subscription, and probably the newest and latest and greatest thing is that Patterns and Practices Group has come through again for us and just delivered last week on Friday a whole set of new patterns and practices for SharePoint 2010, for the composite, working with WPF and Silverlight on Prism 2, 2.1, the Enterprise Library, and some of the other great downloads that you can go out and get information on how to get started in working with this technology and stuff. It is the middle of the summer. It's hard to believe we're already into July, but it goes by pretty quick. This summer we were able to do the Tech Ed down in New Orleans, and like I said, I ran into Rocky, and he was kind enough to come on the show today. So you may know him as an author, as a speaker, as a keynoter at conferences. Rocky, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Having a wonderful summer.
How are you? Is it warm enough out there for you?
Oh, I've been plenty warm, plenty humid. It's just, luckily, I've had a little time with vacation, so I've been spending it on lakes, so it's a lot cooler.
Now, it is one thing about the virtue of living someplace where there are lakes that you can go out and hang out. It's kind of takes the wet blanket humidity out of the picture. But all the same, what's new with you? What have you been doing? What's new in your world?
Oh, I tell you, I've been keeping very busy, gearing up for the conferences that are coming up later this year, and so I've been doing a fair amount of work around that. But most of my time has been spent with CSLA version 4, which is going to come out within the next week or so, I hope.
So the version 4, you're right now on release candidate. I saw you on your blog. You had a place where people can download and test it. You're going to be moving into production, huh?
Yeah, the release candidate has been out just for a few days, and but this is the end of a fairly long series of beta releases where I've been getting some great feedback from people, and I think we're pretty much narrowing in on the end game here. So I think next week will be it.
Next week, and then it's going to be available for download, and people will be able to go out and then get you're working on some videos and some training that's available for that as well.
I'm working on a set of videos that are specifically using CSLA 4 and then Silverlight and WPF and targeting the MVVM design pattern because I think that, if done right, is a really great approach for building Silverlight and WPF apps.
So the MVVM pattern, I guess I saw on Bites by MSDN that you were being interviewed by Tim Huckabee not too long ago and mentioned that you had kind of been converted into, you know, going that direction. What is it that you've seen about mistakes that people need to avoid on implementing the MVVM?
Well, I think with any design pattern, you have to go into it understanding that patterns have consequences, some of which are good and some of which are not good.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the not good consequences of a lot of patterns involve complexity. And so MVVM can radically increase the complexity of your application. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, that's counterproductive. But I think that if you spend some time and kind of really think through some of the issues, both around testability but also around ease of use and accessibility of code, you can come up with a way to implement MVVM in a way that actually reduces complexity while still giving you good testing. But I think more importantly, it actually makes your life easier when building the application, which ultimately, at least in my view, should be the goal.
Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of the project, when you're putting this together, you need to be thinking about how to apply the pattern and make sure you do it in a way that it is going to benefit the process as opposed to just being something that gets bolted on after the fact.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think probably the single biggest thing to recognize up front is that MVVM, just like MVC or MVP or any of those UI framework patterns, let me say that again, any of those UI-oriented patterns require some level of framework in order to actually be useful.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sit down with Visual Studio, open up start a new project and think that you're going to write model, view, and controller code unless you have an MVC framework.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, Microsoft has given us one of those, which is really nice. But there is no MVVM framework that comes with Visual Studio. And so you either have to go find one, and there are several to choose from, or create your own.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty naive to think that you're just going to open up a Silverlight project and write models, views, and view models, and mystically they're going to get connected to each other, because it's the mystically connected part is where the framework comes in.
Right. Well, I just wanted to mention here, I kind of got jumped into the interview part here, but we do have an audience that's also online and available to ask questions. And if you do have a question and you are participating in the show and you can register for these shows ahead of time, you just need to dial into the number and then press the *8 to let me know that you got a question. So there's a number of people who are in the queue, but you haven't pressed *8 to let us know you got a question yet. So hopefully we'll be able to switch over to that. But to come back to the pattern and applying the different things to make it work, one of the benefits of MVVM is that you do have some testability. Is that what you would say is one of the driving things that makes it so you can provide quality software, or is it something beyond that?
I think it goes beyond that. I think that a lot of people started talking about MVVM in the context of increasing testability, and that's fine. And in fact, I think is definitely a benefit. But I interact with a lot of people through conferences and through working with Magenic,
mm-hmm.
Through consulting, and it's surprising the number of people that really don't put testing or writing unit tests at a high priority. And I'm not necessarily here to evangelize one way or the other. And
mm-hmm.
so if you say, well, yeah, but, we're never going to write unit tests, so then we don't care about MVVM. And I think that's not true
mm-hmm.
because, again, if you do it correctly, MVVM solves a set of problems around how do you structure your code, how do you navigate from page to page or form to form in your Silverlight or WPF app. How do you wire up as I go from page one to page two? Like, I'm showing a list of customers, and now I want the user to edit a customer. how do I bring up the edit page and wire up the customer object or entity into the form. And you have to solve these problems. They're not solved automatically. And MVVM offers some pre-built solutions or structure that provides, I think, a really nice, simple, elegant way of building this. And really, I think here's, in my mind, the big thing is this. When you look at building a XAML-based application, you can build it exactly the way you would have done a Windows Forms app.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the way that people built VB apps all the way back to VB3.
Right.
Drag and drop a bunch of controls, double-click on a button, and write some code in the click handler.
And you just hope that the code is in the place where it should be.
Oh, well, I mean, as professionals, do we really want to be writing code in 2010 following the model that was developed in 1993?
Mm-hmm.
Have we learned nothing in all of those years?
Right.
And I think the answer, I would hope, is that, yeah, we've learned that putting code in click handlers turns out to be pretty unmaintainable, and you can't test it, and it becomes fragile over time.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting some structure where you can move that code out of the click handlers, even if you're not going to write unit tests, just getting the separation of concerns increases the maintainability of your code pretty dramatically.
Yeah. And also for the next person who has to come along and support it and carry it forward to the whatever changes that happen inevitably in any software project.
Well, exactly. I mean, the real cost of software, especially working in consulting, as I do, everybody's always fixated on how much it's going to cost to build some software, and that's fine. I understand that because it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
But the real cost of software is, so we spend 6 months or a year building it, and you're going to have to keep it running for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
It's that other 9 years, that's where the real cost is. And so if you can do anything that makes your code more maintainable, more readable, you're going to have a pretty dramatic impact on your overall cost picture over the life of the app.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's sort of like the back in the day, what we called spaghetti code. In fact, there's a podcast out there by Jeff Brand who does something called spaghetti code, kind of playing off of that whole thing. These patterns and practices are just aimed to help us build more supportable code, right?
Yep, that's right.
And as a longtime developer, it's hard to wrap my mind around, if I got to change the way that I think and apply, the software engineering art in a different way. Do you know if the colleges are doing much academically for getting students coming out of college to know about this stuff?
Well, I've interacted with various colleges around Minnesota from time to time, some pretty recently, in fact.
And
I think the thing about especially four-year computer science degrees and that sort of thing is that they're teaching the foundation on which you can build a 20 or 30-year career.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them to teach specific trendy patterns or specific trendy technologies is really counterproductive. At the same time, I mean, you would hope that they're using modern technology, which
mm-hmm.
in my observation they are. But, I don't really care if they're jumping on the latest bandwagon and teaching F-sharp because, F-sharp may or may not be a long-term player in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
What's more important is that they teach functional programming, right, as a concept, and set it alongside object-oriented, component-oriented, all these different things because that's what helps you build this foundation for a long-term career.
Mm-hmm.
So the short answer is, at least in my observation, no. Most of the colleges are not teaching something like MVVM or IOC.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I care.
Yeah.
Right. If anybody was going to teach that, it should be a tech school, because the tech schools are not
today.
Yeah, and get a job today.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's just different purposes for different types of academic course. But
it seems like it should be a foundation, kind of like the classes that they used to teach on languages, where you just, you know, learn the foundations of what languages are out there and stuff like that. But
yeah, well, and I think they, at least again from what I've seen, they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have classes that kind of run through Java and C# and Python and try and expose students to several different ways of thinking. And to my mind, that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any developer that only jumps in and only knows one language or even two languages is really kind of crippling themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand, you know, you got to make a living, so you probably do C# or VB or Java because that's what lets you make a living. But, you know, if you can go out and learn the FlexWiki language, which is probably totally useless from a money-making perspective.
Right.
But it makes you think differently because it's just such a weird thing. And,
yeah.
and then you can take that, you know, new thought patterns and go, huh, you know, although C# doesn't quite do that, I've now got a new way of thinking and maybe solving a problem that I couldn't solve before.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got a question in the queue here. And, Paul, you're on MSDN Radio. How are you doing today?
Hey, good morning, Mike. Doing really well. It's Monday, but we're not going to let that stand in the way of having a great day.
Right. So what's your question, Paul?
Hey, Rocky. Actually, I just have a quick question. How does CSLA, I'm sorry, fit in with things like RIA services? Is it a complementary? I'm just not really not that familiar with CSLA at the moment, but is it a complementary technology or is it a complementary framework? Or does it replace RIA services? Because I've been wrestling with some MVVM applications, and you're right, they're not magic, and they can be, they're good, but they can be painful.
Yeah, that's true. Well, RIA services is, well, let me put it this way. So I've been doing CSLA in one form or another since 1996, and so many times through all of these years, I've had people ask me why Microsoft doesn't have anything that's like CSLA. And RIA services is probably the closest thing that Microsoft has ever done to creating a product that helps you build a business application. And you know, I understand that COM and VB and .NET and all these technologies allow you to build business apps, but they don't give you a structure, right, of how you talk to the database, how you construct your business layer, how you hook it up to the UI. And RIA services is arguably their first real foray into that space. And that's the space where CSLA lives. It helps you build a business layer that gives you some structure on how you load those, you know, your business objects with data and then how you wire them to the UI. So I think the way that I look at RIA services is that it's essentially competitive. There's very little argument, I think, for why you would use both CSLA and RIA services. On the other hand, RIA services is only beneficial to me because all of the things they've driven into the Silverlight UI for data binding and a lot of those capabilities are benefit CSLA just as much as they do anything else. And so, you know, ultimately, it's hard to, you know, who knows what will happen in the future. Certainly today, CSLA is a lot more mature than RIA services and does a lot more. 5 years from now, who knows?
So a matter to see where things are going to go and what grows up out of the technology.
Right. Hey, Rocky, I appreciate it. It's always great to chat with you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Paul. So if you do have a question, just go ahead and press a *8, and then we'll know to bring you in out of conference. So, moving on, what's new or what's going on with your upcoming conferences and speaking engagements? Where are you going to be going, Rocky?
Well, as usual, I've got quite a lineup. So in August, I'll be at VS Live in Redmond,
mm-hmm.
actually on the Microsoft campus. So that'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then in September, I think I'm going to Germany to speak at a conference there called BASTA.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been to Germany, so I'm looking forward to that. And then in October, there's the Twin Cities Code Camp, which has grown into quite a deal. So this year, this fall, it's a two-day Code Camp, actually.
Yeah.
And so that's at the University of Minnesota campus, I think on October 9th or 9th and 10th.
They bring in like 300 or 400 people, don't they?
Yeah, it's become really a big event and well organized, and you know, it's a lot of fun.
So if people wanted to go out and try to get in on the speaking on that, they can go out to Twin Cities Code Camp. I think they're calling for sessions still, aren't they?
Yeah, right. I don't think that it's closed. So if you want to speak, I'm sure that Jason would love to have some submissions.
Oh yeah.
And even if you don't want to speak, it's a, you know, it's a great event, and you know, it's on a college campus, so it's kind of, you know, it's got that college feel to it, so it's fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then in November, there's VS Connections in Las Vegas, and then VS Live in Orlando. So you know, a lot of travel in November. That'll be fun.
A lot of travel, but the Twin Cities Code Camp will be something you can do without the the night in the hotel.
That's for me, anything local is always kind of fun because I can just drive instead of fly.
Mm-hmm. You do other, there's a lot of conferences that are going on, Heartland Developer Conference, Tulsa Tech Fest, and a bunch of those. Do you get out to, and like these fire starters that they do out on the East and the West Coast, do you ever get involved in those?
I get involved in a lot of different things from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I'm not. At least none of the ones that you just listed. I think the ones that I just listed are the ones that I know that I'm speaking at. So
it comes down to you've been busy with this, with getting CSLA out.
Well, yeah, you know, it's I love speaking, and I really enjoy going to these conferences and getting to interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
But I also one way or another need to do some, you know, consulting and do some writing and other things that actually, you know, give me a paycheck.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, speaking of writing, you know, you've authored, I was looking at Amazon, and it's got 19 titles, and I think that might be duplicates or maybe magazine articles are counting as books as well. How did you get started writing, and you know, what was it that got you into the door of the publishing world?
Well, I got started in the mid-90s, let me back up. I've always been interested in communication, so speaking
mm-hmm.
and writing, and so even through high school and university, I spent a fair amount of time doing things like speech and other communication avenues. And I was at a conference. I was an attendee at the time probably 95,
mm-hmm.
and ended up talking to one of the publishers because they had a booth there. And they said, you know, they were looking for somebody to write books on SQL Server, which I wasn't and am not an expert on. And I said, well, I am interested in writing books, but probably more on Visual Basic because that's what I was doing at the time. And they said, oh, you really think this VB thing is going to go anywhere? And I said, yeah, I think it might. And so they hired me to write a chapter, what's called on spec. So basically they paid a flat rate,
mm-hmm.
whether they used the content or not. And they did end up using the content and then asked me to write more. And so, you know, that would have been in late 95, I guess, that was published. And so then I just kind of went from that one chapter and kind of grew into full-blown books. And it really is, believe it or not, it totals up to somewhere around 19 or 20 books that I've written.
Yeah. Well, I know that the amount of work that goes into just even writing one chapter or, you know, two or three chapters in a book is a significant amount of work. It must have been pretty intimidating taking on an entire book.
Well, the first book, yeah, was pretty intimidating. It took me about 10 months and
uh-huh.
Pretty much consumed every bit of spare time that I had. You get more more efficient as you do it, but it still takes 4 to 6 months to write a book. At least, if you're talking about a 700-page book, the quickest I've ever done was Billy Hollis and I wrote a book in 2001, right as VisualBasic.net was going into its first public beta release.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote the entire book between the two of us in 6 weeks.
Whoa.
But that's all we did.
Right. You didn't do any, eating, sleeping, vacationing.
No, nothing. That was it. And I would probably never choose to do that again.
Well, and then you went from doing that to being more in the speaking circuit and kind of going that way. How did you make that transition, or was that just a natural outgrowth of being an author?
It was really a natural outgrowth. If you become fairly established as an author, either of articles or, these days a popular blogger or writing books, and you're interested in speaking, you can probably get an opportunity to speak certainly at local or regional events.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, I have done a lot of speech. In a competitive sense over many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully at least I've got some skills in that area, and I think that helped get me into bigger conferences.
So when you say speech in a competitive sense, you mean like full contact?
Yeah. Well, in high school I was on the debate team, I've loved speaking and wrestling with words for a long time, honestly, when it comes right down to it, it's a combination of I really enjoy trying to convey complicated ideas,
mm-hmm.
and I really enjoy the conversation that happens after a presentation, because I'll get people, they come up in the hallways, and some of the best conversations that I've ever had are discussions around what does and doesn't work, and ways people have tried to do different things, and that's, I love it. That's great.
Would it hurt if I did this? And then you can say, we'll see. Well, that sounds like some great stuff, Rocky. For people who are looking to get started, like we had talked about, the Twin Cities Code Camp is coming up. There's Tech Masters, which is Toastmasters for Geeks. You know, we've got clubs started in Des Moines and Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we almost had one going in Omaha and possibly down in Dallas. At least in the U.S., we're looking at trying to get those things going, and if people are interested in doing something like that, you can always send me an email at mike.tankovich@microsoft.com, and we can get information how you can get a chapter going out there. Well, Rocky, I want to thank you for coming on today, and hope you enjoyed it.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
We do this every week, or at least we're trying to do this every week. The next week here in July, I'm going to be taking a bit of vacation myself. I'm driving out to, of all places, out to Seattle and Redmond just for a family vacation to kind of get a chance to get a breather. But then we're going to be coming back in August and putting together a full lineup of weekly shows. And if you want to register for MSDN Radio, you can go out to msdnradio.com, and there are links from there, and also a blog that kind of promotes what the next schedule is going to be, and I'll be updating that here shortly with our plan and our what we're doing going forward. You can also download the webcast by going out and adding them to your Zune or your music player and subscribe to it. There's a feed that's at, I think it's tinyurl.com/msdnradio will take you to that RSS feed, so you can go and listen to this and previous shows we've got. And we also publish all the content onto Channel 9. So a lot of fun. We had a good time today. We're kind of at the hours, so I'm going to go ahead and check off, and we look forward to talking to you soon from MSDN Radio. We'll talk to you next time. So that's it for this Monday. Go to msdnradio.com and click the registration link if you want to participate in the next show. Until then, happy coding.